Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and also the network with all the little AM, FM affiliates that we have going all across America. And Zeveld, some people on a delayed broadcast, some people live. But you know what I've found out about news is that it doesn't actually have to be up to date. It just has to be news to you in order for it to be news. Or at least that's my perspective anyway. I could be wrong. I wanted to make special note of the enormous amounts of support we've been getting just over these last few days on the call for subscribers and donations. It's very much appreciated. We're well on our way to meeting the target of 200 subscribers for a month, donating about $5 New Zealand each, which is about $3.50 US, or I think maybe even £1.50 if you're in the UK, the Uber Kingdom under the Saxe-Coburg-Gotha Regiment. Oh, sorry, regime. Isn't that how you're supposed to say a tyrannical government these days, a regime, not an administration? I think so, yes. Well, anyway, your support is much, much appreciated, and we need about 200 people to be donating $5 a month. That covers all my costs per week of rent, food, internet, and, you know, other assorted bills. That's it. And once we've got all that, there is absolutely no need to worry about, oh my God, where am I going to eat next week? It's simply about, cool, instead of having to go out and find a job and work for 6 hours for very little, I can instead spend that 6 hours putting an entire hour-long documentary-ish type thing out of an activist's presentation, as I did for Ian R. Crane. Every bit of time that I have, every bit of relaxation that I have, just turns itself into a huge amount of work. You go to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You have a look at the archives back from 2010, 2011, up through till today. Nearly every day we've had a different guest for almost 2 years. Some people will come back regularly, of course, but on the whole, it'll be people that you've probably never heard of before who are saying some very interesting stuff, who otherwise would never even get the chance to get on radio to an international audience, to hear them speak, talking about the issues that they know about, that they have bled, sweated, and been bred for in many cases. It gives all of us something that we very rarely get as part of a mainstream media consuming audience. Perspective. He said, she said, is a heck of a lot more enjoyable if you know exactly what he said and she said, and exactly where he and she is coming from and has been and is going, backstories, etc. Same applies to all the governments. Everything is information, information, information. And I can guarantee you, I don't care how long you've been awake for, how long your research has been going, the rabbit hole, you have heard probably a lot of things. I have too. We all have. But every time we bring on some guests on the Vinny Eastwood show, or even some of the activists that I film during their public meetings and whatnot here in Auckland, New Zealand, you hear very amazing, incredible stuff that otherwise would never be uploaded. Would never you'd never even have access to it if it wasn't for me making sure that I was there filming, that it gets edited, downloaded to the computer, then uploaded to the internet, okay? It's a rudimentary job, as far as I'm concerned. It's not that hard. But just having the time to do it is another thing. And that's why I need people to subscribe for $5 a month. Okay? And it's non-commitment. You don't have to sign up for like 10 years or anything like that. It's just a tiny little bit, cup of coffee in some cases, and it allows me the resources to continue to do all this work that I've been doing, and in fact, upgrade the whole situation. There are a lot of things in the works. We need to be building a proper studio. What I'd really love is like $1 million donation or something. Imagine what we could do with $1 million house to renovate and turn into a TV studio and a radio studio and have a conference room and several bedrooms of decent caliber, so that if any of the activists from overseas come down to New Zealand, they do their conferences and everything, we have a free bed for them that isn't dingy and what have you, you know, quality. And it's about owning the means of production. If you have to be paying rent to somebody or any of that other kind of stuff, that's just basically a drain on whatever project that you got going. The project I got going is you give access to the people who deserve it, to resources. Okay? People bring one of three things into a deal. Talent, resources, or capital. And as far as I see it, the way, if we're going to build a movement that serves everybody's purposes and gives everybody the coverage they deserve, the people who are the ones learning from them, you, the listening audience, are the only ones who are really in a position to in any way collectively finance such a project. The activists, the people who know all the issues, they provide the talent. And as far as the resources are concerned, I just happen to be in that position where I've got the resources to make sure that this audio and video projects and everything, and DVD design and what have you, all the stuff that I've been doing. There's a huge, huge backlog. I've been doing all of this for nearly 4 years. The radio show's only been the last two. So there's a lot there, and please continue to support me, and I'll continue to do my job. That's my promise. And I don't want to keep rabbiting on about it. I'm sorry. My very special guest today has been holding on very patiently, and I apologize to him immensely, is Tony Gosling. Tony, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show.
Hi, Vinny. Thanks very much for inviting me on.
Well, how are you today, my friend?
I'm actually over the moon. I'm in a good mood, definitely. I just feel, I've got this feeling today, and I actually love listening to your voice. I hate to say that. I mean, it sounds like I'm creeping up to you, but you've just got this kind of jaunty, kind of positive attitude to things. Of course, the world we're living in at the moment, it's like the Wicked Witch of the West is waving her magic wand. She's trying to turn everything that's in colour into black and white, and everywhere, you know, sort of going around sucking the soul out of things, sucking, you know, for example, over here, you know, we've got all of our public services slowly being bit by bit strangled, closed down. You know, we're talking about, you know, the dignity of the elderly is slowly being strangled by the money people. And, you know, what we need is people like you out there who are going to inject a little bit of positivity back into society to let people know that they can fight back. Because, you know, all this stuff to do with Occupy, where they've been talking about the 1%. You know, I've actually sat down and worked it out, as many others have. It's not at all the 1%. In fact, I'll tell you, somebody who even told me this, is a European commissioner in charge of jobs and trade. That is the biggest civil servant in the whole of Europe, a guy called Laszlo Andor. He was on the radio show we do in Bristol every week, and he explained it's the 0.0015% that are responsible for the mess we're in. And these are the main people who are really benefiting from it. And we're not talking about even the middle classes or the upper classes. We're talking about the superpower elite, which is a tiny, tiny fraction of humanity, who seem to be hell-bent on literally turning the world into a cesspool whilst they thrive on the takings of thieving everything from everybody. And I think, ultimately, what we're facing is a kind of almost like a Tolkien-esque battle with these people, almost like the Second World War or something, you know, really a massive, massive war with them, because they are hanging on to power, and we are basically banging our fists on the table in righteous anger, saying, you're not having it, yeah? But the good thing about it is that they are only a very, very tiny, you know, disease-brained cult minority. And, you know, we've got every chance of winning this, ultimately. I mean, not only that, you know, you and I know that we're in a situation where good, actually, even though it might not seem like it, always will triumph over evil.
Well, it's not so much that good always triumphs over evil. They both lose and they both win.
When the chips are really down at the end of the day, there's no way somebody like Adolf Hitler can go around running the world. They can try. Of course, they spend a lot of time getting their act together, but ultimately they're going to get smashed.
Adolf Hitler didn't finance himself, okay? He was financed by the Rothschilds, or the same people who finance us all today.
Yeah, but he was elected by the German people in a democratic election. They welcomed him originally with open arms, you know, because they thought he was really helping them out in a difficult financial situation, not unlike the one we seem to be heading into right now. But, I mean, it's just a question of understanding that the Bilderbergers and these people that I've got a website on have started the death spiral off. They're also trying to close off all of the solutions to the economic death spiral. You know, all the basic sensible things like exiting from the Eurozone, taking back your sovereignty, printing your own currency, deciding to take control of your own money. They're closing that one off simply by making sure it's not discussed, number one. And anyone that does discuss it is told, look, you're talking rubbish, you're talking nonsense. I mean, even the Greeks, they're trying to manage to persuade the Greek people to stay in the Eurozone, even whilst it's strangling them. The other thing, of course, is nationalising these private banks, which are strangling the economy, to take those over, you know, nationally, and organise them for the benefit of the people is just simply taboo. So, you know, this death spiral is growing and growing in Europe, and it's about 2 years now we've had this Eurogeddon crisis going on. And meanwhile, people are actually dying. You know, people are dying for lack of health care. They're dying from lack of food and jobs in some parts of Europe as well. People now are totally dependent on food handouts. And this is slowly strangling. I mean, obviously, this is happening in the US too and in other parts of the world. But Europe is not used to this kind of thing, except back in the 1930s.
Well, see, you know what I found was interesting? I'm talking to a lot of my elders, right? And they're saying that back in the day, man, everybody had plenty of money. So basically unemployment was like, what was that? And it was fine. The economies were all working fine. And then after they sell off all the national assets and start bringing in the IMF and the World Bank, suddenly we've got a poverty crisis. And people go, oh, it must be those terrible right-wingers cut everybody's taxes. Or no, it can't be those. It must be those leftists growing the size of government. Well, actually, we are the 99.9999995%, okay, all right, and the skeptics can, and it just comes down to the fact that these politicians, as you said, were kind of like these little servants to the Wicked Witch of Oz or what have you, you know, like the little monkeys with the little hats and the wings and such like that. Just fly, my
buddy. Well, I know when I don't know about you, Jordan, but when I saw the stuff on the telly with the NATO people and the G8 people, I just think of the Eyes Wide Shut film by Stanley Kubrick, which he talks about, you know, the real super rich and real super powerful in this kind of surreal world. And that's the way I see them. I think that they are completely detached from the rest of us. They have absolutely no concern for anybody except themselves. And they live in this kind of Zardoz world. I don't know if you've ever seen that. That's another good feature film by John Borman, where they are the elected leaders. They basically made themselves into gods on Earth, and we will just have to do everything they say. And they do this simply by co-opting the mainstream media. I mean, the BBC, which I used to work for, I worked for them as a researcher and a reporter, then a journalist for 3 years here in Britain. The original BBC Director General, the guy that started it all back in the 1930s, is Lord Reith. Now, he was the man that kept the anti-Hitler voices off the airwaves. He was actually a pro-Nazi himself. When Hitler invaded Czechoslovakia, he was banging his fist on the table, hooray, hooray, isn't it wonderful? This man is doing what loads of people haven't dared to do. So right from its very, very start, what a lot of people don't realise is the BBC was run by a pro-Nazi, by basically one of the 0.0015%. And he had to be actually kicked out of his job in order to allow Winston Churchill to have the first voices on the British airwaves here back in 1938 and 1939, saying, well, actually, guys, we've got to watch Hitler. This guy's dangerous. And so you can see that even from its conception, broadcasting has been used basically to stick a ring in people's noses and lead them around. And that's why, for me, it was quite an interesting experience to be part of the BBC in the days before it became so utterly controlled as it is now. When we had a little bit of freedom, you know, I was working in a radio newsroom doing the nightly news on the radio for whatever, I mean, 7-8 million potential listeners in London. And, you know, working with some fantastic people. But nowadays, what I look at and see the BBC serving up is something absolutely appalling. There's no real proper analysis. And what they're doing basically is stenography. It's not journalism. It's just copying. What they're doing is they're cutting and pasting press releases and sticking them up on our screens as if there's the truth, and there's almost no proper critical analysis. And this goes back, I suppose, to what I'm saying about the real solutions to this, very, very simple solutions to. And in fact, if you want to make it even simpler, just do what Iceland did. You know, this is so obvious, it should be written right across the airwaves and all on all the headlines. Iceland has sorted out its economic difficulties, which were mainly caused by a couple of Brits that went in there and privatised a lot of their banking in Iceland, and they've sorted it all out now. So why can't we just do the same?
After the break, ladies and gentlemen, coming in with Sherlock Edwards, Tony Goldman, is my ear.
Some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion, I can't get no relief. Businessman there to drink my wine, plowman dig my earth. No one will level on the mine.
It's a funny Eastwood show. The show that's all about scumbaggery coming to take over the earth, like the Bilderberg Club and those various other monkey-like demon-worshipping servants of the New World Order having their big wild sex orgies, you know. And I must say, even a mask would not help Hillary Clinton in that scenario. And here's another idea. What we talked about there was nationalizing the major corporate banks, and I suggested this to a group of socialists a couple of years back when they were protesting against ASB, which was basically just cracking unions over the head and screwing over all the things and everything like that, because I thought this was a much better idea. Because think about it, who's got the biggest buildings in every city? The major corporate banks. How on earth is everybody else living in abject poverty in crappy little places that they can't even afford to keep warm anymore because the electricity prices are too high? And the major corporate banks who push paper and click buttons all fracking day build the biggest fanciest establishments on earth. You gotta be kidding me. And people don't see it. And they're the biggest things right there in front of their face. Tony Gosling is my guest. And you were talking about Iceland and how they shook off the banks. Could you actually begin again?
Well, yeah, the Icelandics. I mean, it's a tiny little island, you know. It's almost like this, the ruins of Atlantis out in the middle of the North Atlantic Ocean. What they did, essentially, is they just stepped in. They said, by the way, all these massive debts that you have construed over the last several years, well, we're just not going to pay them. And we're taking you over. And they just reappointed to the banks people that were appointed by their government and kicked out the people, several who were Brits, who had been leading the Icelandic economy down a drain. It was just a fairly brave thing. It was essentially about, look, who's in charge in this country? Is it the government or is it a few foreign private bankers who happen to own a business here? And they passed a bit of legislation, it was only several pages of legislation through their parliament, and just kicked out the Brits and the private bankers and took over the bank themselves. And, you know, ultimately, this is really what sovereignty is about, of course. It's about, you know, us electing people to organize the money system. This is the most important thing in any economy, in any country nowadays, you know, because it is about sharing out resources. Now, you have to just think to yourself, do you want private individuals sharing out those resources for their own private profit and making decisions based on what is going to be good for them and their shareholders, or do you think that we should have individuals that we elect making those decisions for the people? Well, you know, it's not much of a choice, is it? And so that's what the Icelandics did. The thing is, I mean, you know, there's no, absolutely nobody in Europe that I can see in anywhere on the mainstream media, even people like Ben Chu in the independent newspaper, who's pretty broad-minded, and it may be simply that he's frightened to write about this, but it is obvious this is what you do. You just look at how Iceland got out of the crisis, and you just replicate it for other big countries in Europe.
Tony, how long ago did they do that?
About 2 years ago. It was just towards the end of when Gordon Brown was our Prime Minister, and the Icelandics have just shown the way. As usual, you know, they showed the way back in the Viking days, didn't they? They were pretty, they were a bit ruthless in those days, but they were certainly, you know, high tech. And I think in a way it's the fact that it's, you know, it's a country which wasn't really on the big G8 kind of, on these big countries' radar screen. And so they were able to actually assert their democratic rights. Now, I mean, you know, the fact is we have the City of London, which is a dominant factor in British politics, for example, and it's very, very difficult for any of the politicians to get anywhere in any political party in this country without being endorsed by the City of London. For whatever reason, there's very, very few independent minds. I mean, we've had a few. One of them was John Smith, who was the leader of the Labour Party before Tony Blair was. He died in mysterious circumstances. And then we had Robin Cook, who was quite principled foreign secretary under Blair, and he also died in mysterious circumstances. So, you know, you don't need to be a genius to work out that there's a lot at stake here and that people are prepared to bump people off, senior politicians, in order to get their way. And I think that's what's been going on over the last, basically, 30, 40 years since we had the last honest Prime Minister, who was a Labour Prime Minister, Harold Wilson, and even he was booted out by the MI5, who were bugging and burgling their way around the elected government's homes in order to harass them out of office, which they did in 1975. So it's been a long time since we've had any real democracy here in Britain, the so-called mother of parliaments, even though we seem to be very, very good at congratulating ourselves for spreading democracy around the world along with the US. You know, we've got absolutely no right to do that because we're not democracies ourselves. We're oligarchies controlled by this 0.00, I hope you won't get too bored of me saying it, but the 0.0015%. You know, we've got chance of beating these people, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. And just how much growth has Iceland had in the recent economy? Like, have they only just turned the corner? Or
no, they began almost straight away, getting their economy going. And now they're showing a healthy chug. Now, you have to remember that Iceland is in the context of the whole of the rest of Europe, which is very much flatlining generally, apart from a couple of countries like Germany. In Britain, the economy is going down again. It's a double-dip recession. It's a big surprise there. But that's because we've got a Bilderberger for our Prime Minister and a Bilderberger for our Chancellor of the Exchequer. This is back to the old days in the late 1700s of the Hellfire Club. This was a club run by Sir Francis Dashwood, who was the Chancellor of the Exchequer 200 years ago or so, and he was running a satanic sect where they were having orgies and all this kind of thing, and he was outed at the time, but only after he'd been kicked out as Chancellor of the Exchequer because he was making such a mess of the economy. The difference is now we've got a Chancellor who's made a total mess of the economy, and yet he's still in his job, and he will continue in his job. These people are like limpets nowadays. Nothing will shame them into moving. And I'm just hoping that possibly the Murdoch inquiry, the whole Leveson inquiry, which has been exposing the News of the World phone hacking and bribes being paid by News International to the Metropolitan Police. They had all sorts of, you know, basically brown envelopes with thousands of pounds in cash going into Scotland Yard, paying police for information about you know, crime stories and this kind of thing. As that all comes out, and the fact that the Prime Minister's own personal private press secretary was the guy who was the news editor at the News of the World at the time, that is Andy Coulson, was right in the middle of all this, that actually may be a political scandal that removes this government. I think that's actually the best prospect we've got to get rid of these crooks. And they are basically a government by the millionaires, because we've got 13 millionaires in our cabinet, by the millionaires, for the millionaires, and the people just simply don't get a look in. The fact of the matter is, though, people are getting angry, people are getting really annoyed, and I'm really glad to see that there's looks like there's going to be a big protest this year at the Bilderberg Conference in Chantilly. You know, this is one of the most important places to do a protest, never mind the G8, NATO, or anybody like that, because the Bilderberg really is the belly of the beast. I don't know if you would agree, Vinny.
It's certainly the most public belly of the beast that we're capable of actually gathering around that we know about.
Well, that's true, in that the Council on Foreign Relations is probably another one. That's fairly public, although there's never any protests, hardly ever any protest there. And also, not a lot of people realise that it was back in 1943 that the Council on Foreign Relations actually first came up with the Bilderberg Group as a concept. This is during the Second World War, you know, basically just even before D-Day. They decided that, yes, we are going to win this war, but what's going to happen afterwards? We need to make sure we control the outcome. The fact was that the Council on Foreign Relations were actually rather close to the Hitler regime, and they were very friendly with some of the people who'd been running the industries. They were looking enviously at the concentration camps, at the labour camps, and saying, this is great, isn't it? Look, all these slave labour going on over there. And in fact, there was a visit by John D. Rockefeller before 1943, before the US entered the war, over to visit concentration camps. There were some photographs, and you probably find them online somewhere, of John D. Rockefeller actually touring around concentration camps, admiringly looking at, the Germans or the Nazis have actually done it. Isn't this wonderful? Look, slave labour, just stick people in jail. And, of course, America is very, very good at that. I mean, we're starting to privatise our prison system over here, but once you stick people in jail and you're starting to incentivise incarceration, then you've got all the makings of a basically a labour camp-style, concentration camp-style system. And that's what they were admiring at the Council on Foreign Relations. So, of course, they were quite happy in the Bilderberg conferences to do deals with European industrialists, and particularly the chairman of the Bilderberg of the day, which was Prince Bernhard of the Netherlands, who was himself a former SS officer from the 1930s. You know, he'd been in the SS uniform, and there he is, chairing the very first ever Bilderberg conference. So you don't need to be a genius to work out that these people are actually Nazis. They don't wear swastikas, but they certainly are, and they're an economic Nazi force.
Wasn't one of the monarchs of England supportive of the Nazis openly and had to step down?
Say that again?
Wasn't one of the monarchs of England publicly
supportive? Well, he was, yeah. You're talking about Edward VIII. Edward VIII, this is in 1937, he was, yes, openly supported Hitler, as did, as I said, the Director General of the BBC back in the 30s, and he had to abdicate because he was in love with a woman called Wallis Simpson, who's American, but she was also a Nazi agent. She'd wheedled her way into his underpants, the king, you know, the, basically they got, the Nazis had got the biggest prize in Britain, which was the king. And so he had to be sort of shuffled off sideways, embarrassingly, and the job was taken by his brother, who was King George the VI. What a lot of people don't realise, though, and John Loftus told me this on the programme we do in Bristol every week, I do a current affairs show in Bristol on the radio, was that Edward and Mrs. Simpson, they actually made it across to France. They were touring around. This is right at the very beginning of World War II, the end of 1939, beginning of 1940. And they actually tried to get across the border into the Nazi territory, into Nazi Germany. And they were arrested by MI6, the British intelligence people. Good God, we can't have the former king going over to the Nazis. That would be a propaganda coup for Hitler. We can't have King Edward VIII broadcasting on the radio across Europe saying how wonderful Hitler is. So MI6 arrested him. And he was then sent off to the Bahamas, and he was made the governor of the Bahamas and kept well out of the way for the rest of the war. So you can see there was, you know, there, and there still is, I think, high sympathies amongst the highest echelons in British society, particularly amongst the Saxe-Coburg-Gotha family, which, of course, Edward and George VI were part of, very, very sympathetic with the Nazis. They saw themselves as the leaders, the gods, if you want, and the people were their subjects, and if it meant if it would make an efficient country by putting the people in concentration camps and forcing them to work for slave labour wages in factories, then so be it. I mean, that's just their idea of an efficient way to run a country.
And all this is kept kind of out of the headlines, and you find it very interesting. You can predict what kind of policy particular governments and particular individuals are going to propose if you have a look at what kind of stuff that they've done in the past. And you have a look now, okay, that's right. Most of our leaders and the ones who are actually in control of the parties and the media and the police and all of that kind of stuff are basically fascist, jackbooted thugs who have no concern for our rights whatsoever and want a vicious, tyrannical police state in a dark age of humanity forever. Okay. Now
they're control freaks,
Vinny.
I mean, that's basically it. And also, they have an incredible inflated view of their own abilities, and they do see themselves as the natural kind of, you know, we are. Basically, what happens is, you know, imagine you or I, if we were to start getting wealthy. I mean, I don't own my own home or anything like that, but I mean, say I'd got my own mansion, and then I managed to make more money, and I got my other three or four mansions, and then I got, a nice yacht, one of those big super yachts, that was a few more million, and then I got, had loads of prostitutes, I had loads of whatever I wanted, on and on and on and on and on. Ultimately, what you then want is you start wanting power and influence. You want to control newspapers, you want to control television stations, you want to control arms companies, you want to control those kinds of things. Okay, once you've got hold of some of those, once you've taken over a few of those and you're mates with the people that run them, then you want to start taking over the House of Commons, you want to start taking over the Senate, you want to start taking over the House of Representatives, you want to start taking over parliaments. And this is a toxic, real toxic combination, and this is what these people have succeeded slowly but surely in doing, is basically through the aggrandizing of wealth, they're now taking over all of those basic things that we need in order to have any kind of sane society. So society is definitely going down the tubes. I mean, I don't think, you know, we don't really need to be told much more about that. The fact is, what's happening, certainly with the youth, is the...
Well, hold on, Tony. Conveniently, we don't have to talk about any more of that because we're coming to a break. Just kind of like the totalitarian corporate takeover tiptoe. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can even join us in the chat room there. Back in a tick.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky.
There's a shadow coming over the sky called the British Empire, ladies and gentlemen, and the sun never sets. on Britannia's holdings because it never rises either, because they want to keep you perpetually in darkness, bondage, and slavery. Thank you, Cecil Rhodes, you diamond in the rough, you, with your seven secret wills formed to use your vast wealth. Anybody ever heard of Rhodesia? It was named after this dude, Cecil Rhodes. He plundered copious quantities of diamonds and gold and goodness knows what else out of that country. And then when he died, he was basically the richest man in the world. And he drew up these seven secret wills. Only one of these wills has actually ever been revealed. Have you ever heard of the Rhodes Scholarship? That's what one of these seven giant wills were put out for. And G. Edward Griffin exposed that the rest of these wills were to finance different arms of a secret society that was had the express purpose of spreading the British Empire and its dominance, finance, laws, everything, everywhere, and to ensure its rule for all time. And we currently live in that society. Anybody who thinks that they live in a sovereign nation, no. Sorry, if you have a private bank issuing your currency, and trust me, we all do, and if you haven't, you'll be invaded soon, because that's what happens. You know, we live under that rule, ladies and gentlemen, and we need to expose the Nazi roots behind it, and also the very cause and easy remedy to the solution. Nationalizing their banking cartel. They have control over our countries because they have control over our currency. Once they have that, they care not who makes its rules, allegedly. And my solution to the derivatives crisis is not entirely similar to that. You just have a look at the derivatives. Hey, here's a whole bunch of money that's made up and doesn't exist. Why don't we just pretend that it actually really doesn't exist? Oh, okay. Suddenly we don't have quadrillions and quadrillions of debt to worry about. Isn't that a fabulous and very creative solution. Well, at least I think so anyway. A solution to a problem that doesn't exist is pretending that it doesn't exist. Pretty straightforward, I would have thought. Tony Gosling is my guest. Welcome back.
Hi, Benny. Yeah, I agree with all you've just said there. One thing I would add, though, is that a lot of people think the British Empire is, oh, well, that's a long gone thing, you know. You're a New Zealander, are you?
That's right.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're sort of part of that so-called Commonwealth. Well, just to let you know, the Americans have always, the US has always hated the Commonwealth. I mean, not only just the idea of people holding their wealth in common, but it's actually the old-style Commonwealth. The Commonwealth Centre in London has been pretty much closed down. The Commonwealth Museum, which was in Bristol, where I live, is now totally defunct. They had the cheek to do a exhibition, and which was brilliant, actually, warts and all type exhibition, all about the 200th anniversary of the abolition of slavery, and within months all their funding had been pulled, so they've had to completely close down the Empire and Commonwealth Museum. But there is a sort of nasty side of the British Empire that still lingers, of course, and that is the royal family and all their pals. I don't know if you had it on the news over there, but we had the biggest meeting ever of kings and queens and princes and princesses from around the world in Britain last Friday. They all got together at Windsor Castle, which is the home of the Order of the Garter, which has been going since medieval times, which is a basically 26, that's 2 times 13, covens of knights surrounding the royal family, so ever since medieval times, that they had the liar's lunch there last Friday, and then they had the dictator's dinner at Buckingham Palace in the evening. So this is still actually quite a powerful network, and the idea that you've got the King of Bahrain sitting down with other kings and queens from around Europe just to have a nice little dinner, you know, gives you an idea that there's still quite a lot of power out there that everyone that comes to Britain to do this kind of thing. So there's a sort of, I don't know, weird kind of respect for Britain that a lot of these people seem to have, which, I mean, I certainly don't have any respect. You know, I have love, but not respect for the actions of the King and Queen. I mean, John Morgan over in Australia has just brought out the last, I think, in his series of books about the murder of Princess Diana, well, the assassination, really, of Princess Diana. And, you know, that's definitely my view. My contact,
we had him on the show.
You know, would all say that the present Queen and Duke of Edinburgh were definitely in the loop when it came to the decision to assassinate Diana, basically because she was just about to take Princes Harry and William off on holiday with Dodi al-Fayed, and they were going to have a fantastic, gorgeous week away from this Wicked Witch of the West kind of thing that is the British royal family. And I don't think if they'd been on that week, they would ever have wanted to come back again. Basically because of the stifling atmosphere amongst many of the people in the current royal family. So there is still this British Empire. You're absolutely right about Cecil Rhodes, of course. He did create a network after his death, this thing called the Royal Institute for International Affairs in London and the Council on Foreign Relations in the United States. Both, all of these received money. I don't think it was necessarily a British Empire thing, but it was an attempt to privatise foreign policy right across the world. And that's essentially what they've done. And the other thing is the BBC are partners at the Royal Institute for International Affairs, so whenever there's a new problem comes up in a country around the world, who pops up on the TV to tell us all about it? Oh, it's somebody from Chatham House. The Royal Institute for International Affairs will tell us all how it's going to transpire. So they have basically privatised the whole idea of what used to be the job of the Foreign Office and the State Department. These people are really basically now just a sideshow. All the foreign policy, all the foreign policy journals, both the Sun-style, tabloid, you know, newspaper-style things, and the more highbrow broadsheet newspapers are all churned out by the Royal Institute for International Affairs, Council on Foreign Relations, people like this. And that is basically the way things are done. And the Foreign Office, even if somebody in the Foreign Office thought, well, maybe it's not a good idea to nuke Iran, the fact that it's already been decided by everybody at the CFR is really down to Cecil Rhodes and his rather evil plan all those years ago to privatise foreign policy right across the world with this kind of Hydra network of interconnected institutes of private institutes of foreign policy. That's exactly what's happened. And Bilderberg, of course, is very much closely linked in with these networks. The same people go to Royal Institute for International Affairs and Council on Foreign Relations as go to the Bilderberg. The other thing that just really worries me about the way that Bilderberg is going is that they really are taking on all the big internet people. Facebook, Amazon, LinkedIn, Google, these types are always now at the Bilderberg conferences. The other big change in the last year's meeting at St. Moritz in Switzerland was that we also had some of the senior people from the Chinese finance ministry over too. So that was the first time I've ever seen anybody really from outside the NATO countries with any sort of serious clout invited along to a Bilderberg conference. And that's a really important thing, I think, for people to realise, is that basically that the Chinese Politburo is now being sucked in on the Bilderberg train of thought, which is really pretty concerning. Mind you, it's not totally surprising, since their attitude to human rights and to people's general well-being is exactly the same as that of the Chinese. Essentially, they want to control as much as they can. They have no interest in people's freedoms, and they'll just do as much as they possibly can that they can get away with that will bring more power to themselves. And so I can see quite happily Henry Kissinger, the organizer of the 1973 coup in Chile, which led to the deaths of tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people, sitting down quite comfortably with these Chinese leaders at this next Bilderberg conference in Chantilly. Good thing is, of course, that there is going to be quite a sizable protest. I noticed that the Intel Hub, Alex Jones and others, are really pushing it this year. And I think if anybody of your listeners has never been to a Bilderberg meeting, there is so much positive to say about get yourself down there, because it is fascinating. The people you meet, first of all, are really interesting. It's incredibly empowering being with other people who can see the way that these fascists are trying to control our world. And you get this kind of force multiplication when everybody's in the bar in the evenings. Everybody's like bouncing off each other. It's one of the most exciting places in the world to be, is the Contra Bilderberg hotel. You know, that's the place to be. And also, of course, it's a really positive to have so many people down there who are all able to actually get the word out about what's actually happening, and possibly even, you know, actually occupy the hotel, which is what they're talking about this year, is actually occupying the Bilderberg hotel rather than just sitting around outside, getting inside and getting right in their faces.
I think we're having some very major technical difficulties with the microphone and everything today. Tony, have you heard anything that I've said this last segment?
I haven't. No, not a lot, no.
No. Okay. Well. Anyway, you know that big royal meeting that you were talking about and seeing if we had any media coverage? You know what they reported instead? That there was a car crash and two students from the US died because they weren't wearing their seatbelts. and also on the Diana inquest, I had John Morgan, the guy who literally wrote the books about the Diana inquest, on the show last week, and we got some archives there if you want to check that out, ladies.
Yeah, I will do. Yeah, thanks a lot. I think he's done an absolutely brilliant job, and he's not just coming at it from a Republican Australian point of view. He's looking at it basically because this is almost an undoable thing here in Britain. I mean, we had Keith Allen's film, which is also brilliant. I don't know if you've seen that, from last year, called gosh, what's the name of it? It's the verdict that was in the inquest against Diana. Unlawful killing, that's right. And that has not still been shown in Britain anywhere. It's actually apparently supposed to be illegal to show it because the Duke of Edinburgh has asked or demanded legally for lots of cuts in it. But it's absolutely brilliant film. You can see it online. I think you have to go to Press TV, their YouTube channel, and they did a review program of large parts of the film about Diana's death. So, you know, it's absolutely brilliant what he's done. And he's, you know, this is lifting a weight from our shoulders, because everybody who ever met Diana, as I had the pleasure to do, knows that she was an absolutely wonderful woman. She was honest. She was exactly what we need in this world, which is a really honest, loving, good leader. And so therefore, just like John Smith before her and Robin Cook, who I mentioned earlier, she was dispatched.
We're coming to break, Tony, unfortunately. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Tony Gosling for one more hour. Back in a minute. Ladies and gentlemen, is the callous nature of a psychopath. And you'll be surprised just how many of them there are. It's about around 1 in 100 people are what are known as proto-psychopaths, people who are quite likely have no emotional connection to the rest of the human race and are operating purely on the reptilian brain part, which is based upon survival, physical gratification, things of that nature. People who don't have long-lasting relationships with other people because there is no depth to their character. But they're very nice and smiley when you first meet them, and you almost feel intoxicated by their presence, which is no surprise why a lot of politicians happen to be psychopaths, because in a position of power is where you will find psychopathic natures will gravitate towards, because they think of themselves and themselves only, and they wish to have as much power and dominance over other people as they possibly can. And inflicting suffering is something that they actually enjoy, as if it's a game and a joke. Privatization is the backbone of the British Empire, because it was very early on in the piece where the royals began to do what they had commissions, like they would commission privateers. That's where they, the word commissioner comes from. And a privateer was basically just a pirate that they paid money to go out and plunder and destroy their enemies and what have you. And later on, privateering became quite a fashion with the Dutch East India Trading Company, which was more or less just a modern reversal of a Blackwater / IMF corporation that just came in and raided countries, killed people and took them over and basically dominated. And you have a look at the trading flag that the, that, that company flew. It is almost the exact same as the good old-fashioned United States flag, except instead of having the white stars on the blue, they have a little British Union Jack, okay? Because when the stripes of the flag are going straight across, that's a symbol that the entity, company, or country is at war. There are original flags in the United States where the red and white stripes actually go vertical. It's the sign of the peace flag. So ever since Cecil Rhodes and all of these royals and scumbaggery ever started dominating the earth with their policies, their armaments, and of course copious quantities of cups of tea to give all their troops a heck of a lot of energy, and also the very first essence of basically biological warfare, which was to use lime for their sailors to hold back scurvy, because when their sailors were nice and healthy and their adversaries and perhaps Spain and everything like that could barely even lift a cannonball, they beat them to hands down. And the sailors didn't even know what the vitamin C was. They didn't even know that there were even limes. You know why? Because they didn't tell them. It was a secret. And they even squeezed the limes into their rum, because they couldn't get the sailors to drink it otherwise. Oh yeah, I love the British Empire. It's a great place to be ruled by. Tony Gosling reporting live from the what I've called the loving Uber Kingdom, the UK. Welcome back, Tony. Are you there? Yeah. Oh, he just left. He didn't expect another hour. Okay. Well, I just got that info. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. The caller lines are now open. The number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Now, we were talking about the privatisation of the British Empire and all that kind of stuff. And another part of this Bilderberg and what have you empirical nonsense is David Rockefeller. He's an integral part of every Bilderberg conference. He's set up in large part, and I think he's now the chair of the Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, and umpteen different think tanks. I think he set up like nearly 100 think tanks or whatever, with all these other power brokers and high top eugenicists, sociopathic scumbaggery elite all over the place. And dig this. He has praised China and its policy to how it treats its people. Okay? You know, death camps, work camps, all of those kind of things. It's freaking unbelievable. It's quite horrible. And these people want that for all of us. The caller number is 218-339-8525. Now we've got a first caller here, Sid in Kentucky, my man.
Hey, Benny.
What's up?
I just wanted to say that I sure was hoping to hear Iceland all over your station today, and sure enough, your guest talks about Iceland. You know, we're not talking about the solutions to our problems. We don't seem to be doing that. And nowhere on alternative, I don't want to call it alternative radio, I want to call it mainstream, because that's what we are now. This is really what it is. The truth is here. But we're not talking about Iceland, and it's almost a screaming loudness on why we're not talking about it. It's very loud to me, And I'm not sure if I understand why we're not talking about just what they did. It's amazing, that little country, what they did.
You know, you're absolutely right. And I think that many, many small little instances can prove very valuable lessons that can be applied elsewhere. Iceland's just one of those things in one of the sectors that we discuss.
Yeah. Well,
of course the money system is the key to everything.
You know, Vinny, they broke the code in Iceland. They figured it out that what you tell these people is take your derivatives, take all the bills associated with your derivatives, wrap it up in a nice package, and put it where the sun doesn't shine. Go away. And that's what we're going to do here. That's what's going to happen here, and here in America, I mean, and hopefully in the whole world, Vinny, is that we're going to tell these people to go away. Take your bills. Take your trillions. So every day, Vinny, now they're telling us here, you know, the American household now owes, you know, X number of dollars. Like we just spent that money. I defy one family to show me what they got for their money.
You know, they got a lot of debt, didn't they?
They got nothing. They got nothing. It's a ruse. It's an illusion. The facts are, Iceland is who we should be looking at. We should be emulating. Who we should be celebrating and patting on the back.
And broadcasting it all around the thing. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we've all been under the rule for the bankers, at least in the US, for like, what, 100 years plus?
Yeah.
And then we look at this one little country who threw them off in it, basically with one piece of legislation. And it's interesting that it was only a few pages of legislation, isn't it? Because they had to write thousands upon thousands upon thousands of pages of legislation in order to make the derivative tyranny. And it only takes a few words to shatter that 1,000 pages of BS, doesn't it?
Yeah. Hey, peace, Vinny. I'm going to let you go on back to your work. I love you, man.
Love you too, bro.
Okay. Talk to you, brother.
You all right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you can call in 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. And, I think as a whole, maybe it's part of the conditioning that we get from the mainstream media, isn't it? That we tend to gravitate towards disaster and we just love it, don't we? We stay awake for it. We gag for it. It's something that we crave. Like, we want to be constantly on edge with that fight or flight mechanism. You know what that does? When you're constantly on edge like that, you know, when you're seeing bad stuff all around you and you don't have any time to, like, just sit out on your back porch among the big trees and the beautiful birds singing and just go, when you don't have any time to do that, you're constantly on edge all the time, and that causes you immense amounts of stress. You know what stress does to you? It causes about 90% of all illness. And now in New Zealand, in the Southern Hemisphere at least, we're all going into flu season. And I love it how the New World Order just kind of preys on what's naturally there anyway and just like, oh, it's flu season. You better come and get your nice, fabulous, mercury-filled toxic derivatives from formaldehyde thimerosal shots directly into the bloodstream. It's only got umpteen different viruses from the strain that was released a year before from our biotoxic chemical labs in Maryland, Fort Worth, Dallas, Dietrich, South Africa, AIDS virus lab, complicated. They're just throwing it into you. Right? Well, the scariest thing that I found out about vaccines, and hats off to Clint Richardson and his film Lethal Injection, maybe a little bit slow, and maybe watch it in a couple of parts, or perhaps drink excessive amounts of coffee when you watch it. I don't know how long. Maybe Clint just needs some music or something. I'll get him some music. I don't know. But anyway, watch through this thing. Oh, baby, is there a lot of stuff in vaccines that you do not want going into your arm? And speaking of, oh, baby, have you heard of aborted fetal cells? All right, now dig this. You know how there's a whole bunch of aborted fetuses every year, right? Well, you know what they do with those baby fetuses? They sell them to the pharmaceutical companies. They don't just sell the fetuses. They sell their organs, their livers, their kidneys, and all of their other little things, right? And then they grow viruses on those little unborn baby organs. And then they put those viruses, red blood cells from that dead baby and all, and inject it directly into your bloodstream. And they do that when you're a baby. That's when you get your first round of inoculations. When you're like 6 weeks old, when you haven't even gotten a chance to get an immune system together. Your mother's milk, that's where you get your immunity from. Whatever your mother's immune to, you become immune to as well. That's how it's supposed to work, how it has worked. And now, suddenly, for some reason, people have started believing this big lie and rhetoric that natural systems are inefficient. They just don't work. That only a pill or an injection with a poison needle is your salvation. This is kind of what privatizing your health looks like. Privatizing your services, privatizing your banking system, privatizing your education. It is happening everywhere. Privatizing your prisons. Okay, think about the incentives. There were times in the past where companies were run by collectives of people, government-run companies that were specifically run at a loss, because that one company running at a loss meant that an entire country had access to incredibly cheap materials and allowed them to compete very, very well on the open markets. Okay, in Britain, I think they used to subsidize steel production, for instance. And in the United States now, they subsidize corn. But the problem was that sometimes these subsidies, instead of being for the original intended purpose, which was to help strengthen the entire economy, what happens is these subsidies start to get captured by a small group of people who use it as a mechanism to vacuum the wealth out of an economy. And that is what privatization of the proceeds is about. Privatization of the infrastructure is simply the first step in that road. Firstly, once you've taken control over a company, you get to decide what happens with all that company's money. Don't you? So in Auckland here, Agenda 21, capital of the world, we had $28 billion worth of public assets. This is a city of 1.1 million people. $28 billion worth of public assets handed to private corporate boards, okay, who are unelected, unaccountable, and no records of their meetings are kept, and there is not a single member of the public that's allowed to be in on these meetings either. Would you give $28 billion of your money and assets to somebody who, for all intents and purposes, could do anything they want with it at any time and have absolutely no consequence at any time at all? No, you wouldn't. You know why? Because that's insane. But what these politicians do is they tell you all that it's going to be more efficient if we just willy-nilly flog off the family silver to people who we can't trust. They convince people it's a good idea. By saying, they don't convince them that it's a good idea. What they convince them of is that it's their only option. It's their only idea because, oh, we've got all these other problems and blah, blah, blah. We've got all this debt which we got us into. And we've got all this terrible stuff which we caused. And so now this really horrible option which we came up with is the only option which you can have. And you're not going to have a choice about it either. Sorry. Oh, you want a referendum? You want to have the people have their say? Do you? No, sorry. Non-binding. You're going to have to go out, get 500,000 signatures just in order to get the 330,000 because some people double up and there's other things that aren't confirmed and blah, 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 as happens with signatures sometimes. And at the end of it, we can just say, yeah, look at all that work you just did. Guess how much work it takes me to just say no to you. Oh, wait, I just did it. You know, there's a hilarity of when a government's passing draconian legislation, you do them the justice of writing a submission to them. Now, I don't think that submission is a brilliant idea in this particular case, because they'll take everything that you've got. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back. 218-339-8525 is the number to call.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Yeah,
I've been to Reno, Chicago,
back.
Fargo,
the
Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man.
Yeah, protesting against Bilderberg everywhere, man, because believe me when I tell you, the people who come to these meetings, Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands, Dutch Royal Shell, BP, Pepsi Cola, Google, Facebook, Twitter, you know, all everybody who has the biggest amount of influence, the top 120 bankster elite of the world, presidents and prime ministers, heads of state. I mean, come on. You think all these people are coming together to just have some nice cups of tea and what have you? And just, you know, put on some masks, have some dirty sexual foreplay or whatever. I'm sure that's part of it, but what we're talking about here is the ruling elite, okay? These are the people who set the rules, hence the ruling elite, okay? The oligarchy, meaning the rule by those who have the most money. Archy is a system of government. Incidentally, you know what system of government they have in Jamaica? They have a monarchy, as in to be ruled by mon. Anyway, these people in the Bilderberg Group have proven themselves time after time. You talk about the Rockefeller foundations who have financed toxic vaccines, wars, financing governments, and basically they own a whole lot of stuff pretty much everywhere. Rothschild agents and everything. That's basically what the Rockefeller crew do. There's a whole bunch of drug running that goes on. That's what the CIA and a lot of these major intelligence agencies are actually used for, is to run drugs in and out of the United States. I mean, there was even an Iran-Contra scandal where they were shipping the drugs out and the guns in. And it still goes on today. Rumor has it one of the largest CIA bases outside of Langley, Virginia, is now located squarely in Afghanistan. Afghanistan, before the United States came in, was producing like, I think it was like either 0 or 1% of the world's heroin or something like that. The Taliban had nearly wiped it all out. But along comes Poppy Bush's little boy and boom, inside of the first year, poppy production is up 3,000%. And it is now, currently, like 90% of the world's heroin is produced in Afghanistan. And guess who has to run security detail for all of these poppy fields and everything like that? That's right, your troops who have to go over there. All right? Oh, mate, isn't it great? I get to serve my country, make sure that the local drug lords have their heroin because they're supporting our criminal cartel of a regime and all of that kind of stuff. It's good. We have to grow the opium, otherwise the Taliban will grow the opium, even though there was no opium while the Taliban were actually in control, and now they have to grow opium in order to fight against us because we invaded them and didn't have any justification and didn't even find the guy we were here for and just here to basically grow opium and stuff. Yeah, you know, oh my God. Come on. Come on. And guess who is running security detail for this big CIA base? You guessed it. New Zealand personnel, our special forces. And we've also been spotted out. Oh, yeah, we're doing non-combat operations, right? Where do you send your special forces? You send them into combat situations because they're the ones who can, A, do the most damage, B, be undetectable, and C, quite likely most of the time, get in and out without losing a man or even having such a, so much as a shot fired. Okay? That's what your special forces are there for. So anybody, even the Prime Minister of New Zealand, John Key, as trustworthy a bloke as he is, anybody who tells you that your special forces are going there and they're not going to be in combat situations and they're not going to have their lives at risk is lying to you. Okay? It's just that simple. You don't send people who can kill people into situations where they're not going to get shot at all. Okay? Well, what are you, naive? And then whenever one of them does die, and it's funny because we have the our troops, they don't die in combat situations, as I made the impression of, but they die in things like Humvee rollovers or something like that because they didn't have the proper rollover training that they were supposed to. You know, it's little stupid things like that that get people killed. Isn't that just infuriating? And then when they come back, the Prime Minister comes out and he goes, oh, the bleeding hearts, oh, our troops, they're heroes, they're blah, blah, blah. He died in an accident, and he wouldn't have even died in that accident or been in the position to be in that accident if you hadn't basically unlawfully sent him there in the first place to a war that we shouldn't even be involved in to suppress a people that don't even need suppressing, and for all intents and purposes were getting their drug control under... They were getting it all done sweet as. This is why intervention, particularly military intervention, doesn't work or improve the situation. Okay? Let's say you're having a domestic situation with your wife. At what point is a cluster bomb going to improve your family situation? It's not going to. Okay? It doesn't work that way. Anybody who gets involved in war automatically starts to see the real horror and stupidity of it. You know, it's foolish to want to go to war, but you only realize that after you realize what really goes on. Some people figure out what really goes on before they even get sent there, and still get sent there anyway, and want to go home the whole time, and start freaking out because they don't want to be there, so they start taking psychiatric meds that the medic on base starts to get hand out everybody, like their packets of Maltesers and M&Ms and crispy crunchy Oreos with all the different colors of the rainbow, like a starburst. Get that down, you boy. That'll be a... Whoops. He's gone nuts and he's gone and killed an entire village. Really? Well, how often does this happen? Well, as it turns out, it happens quite a lot. Especially if you happen to be working for Blackwater. There's reports coming out of these guys running around naked, shooting random citizens, running around naked with M4s, tripping balls on acid. You want to have somebody who's in a war zone with an escape complex, with no conscience, running around killing random citizens? Holy Shiite Muslim. It's unbelievable. The excruciating pain that we could even conceive of being one of the victims or one of the family members. You see your entire neighborhood leveled like it was a sandcastle that hadn't been there for the past 1,000 years. Talking about wiping out one of the oldest cultures. I mean, this is what happened in Iraq. And now people are talking about, oh, well, it's going to be Iran next. That's going to be good. You know, it'll be much better this time. People have got such short bloody memories, they forget that when you sell your state assets, your country gets into debt. They forget that when you go to war, your country gets into debt. They forget that when you give a private banking cartel the control of the issuance of your currency, your country gets into debt. And they forget that when you get into debt, it means you're a slave. You're not free. Okay? People are walking around like they're free. I get to go to my job. I get to go to the drinking on the weekends. Really? Okay? Do you pay taxes? Yeah. Did you agree to pay all of those taxes? Well, no. What happens if you don't want to pay those taxes? Well, they'll still get them out of me. Then you're not freaking free. Do you still have to keep working all day? Yeah. Even though you don't want to? Yeah. Is your boss a real dick? Yeah. Does he insult you? Yeah. Do you feel like you wish you could escape all the time? Yeah. Do you feel like you have to work actually way too many hours for way too little pay and you get no overtime and all your pension vanishes and disappears and all that kind of stuff? Yeah. Then you're not freaking free. do you have to sign up for a military job because there's no other work in the area? Yeah. Do you wind up having a whole bunch of random vaccines and everything like that, and you don't know what in them, pumped into your bloodstream as you go into a combat zone, and you're told to take them because if you don't, you'll be court-martialed and sent to a brig and everything? Yeah, then you're not freaking free! Do you have to vote for one or two strains of evil that postulate themselves and wear one different tie of the colour of the other? Okay? One doing the red, one doing the blue. And do these things incidentally mimic the exact light spectrum all the way from ultraviolet for infrared? Yeah. And does every time you elect those people, do they keep destroying your country and sending people overseas and getting you massively into debt and selling off your state assets and taking away all your rights and liberties and telling everybody that everything's going to be fine as long as you keep trusting us? Yeah. Then you're not freaking free. Okay? I cannot stress this enough. Every single bit of our existence connotes slavery of lesser or greater degrees, and that is the only difference that we ever feel. We're slaves on the one hand, or we're slaves on the other, okay? And I don't think that's a choice. That is not a choice. That is not free. That is lies perpetrated by scumbaggery filth who have no concern whatsoever for the decency that mankind deserves to be treated with. They've long since sold themselves out, and they will forever sell us out. And any moment of trust that we give to them in any way, shape, or form, I believe, will only lead us further down a road to further bondage, less freedom, more debt, slavery. Frack that. I'm not going to be manipulated anymore. Okay, people are talking about David Shearer, the new leader of the Labour Party. You know, is the opposition? Oh, he wants to save our assets. Oh, he wants to do all this. He wants to stop this bad, bad, evil National Party or whatever. The guy used to work for the UN. Okay, high level humanitarian. Blah 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 blah. Okay, I don't understand why people are so blindsided by the UN anymore. Okay, they've been caught countless times doing horrific things all over the place, many, many times over. They are some of the worst human rights violating, psychopathic, child sex cult running, drug manufacturing, evil, war-torn, communist, right-wing assassinating bunch of psychopaths the world's ever known. And everybody bows down to them. Oh, they're so nice. They want to take small arms away from everybody. They've got to be so good for you, right? Oh, yeah, right. Every single time somebody starts taking away small arms from the average person. No, I don't care whether you're a gun owner or not, or you know how to shoot or anything like that. Just listen to this. This is the lesson of history. Every single time, and I'm not joking here, every single time when a government or other entity or whatever comes in and tells people that they cannot have any arms of any kind, that population that gets disarmed is subsequently exterminated. Every time. Okay, and it even works on the small scale as well as the big scale. Even look at just simple handgun bans in DC. Murder rate shoots right up, pardon the pun. Why? Because the people who are going to commit the crimes and be bad are going to be the ones who don't want to have their victims armed. And believe me when I tell you, your nations are predatory and they see you as their prey. And don't be a victim. Rabbits don't get exterminated when they've got guns, right? And like I said, even if you don't find that guns are important or anything like that, just know what happens when they start taking guns off other people who do. Okay? That you're next. Same thing when you're voting with politics. Every single bit of these pieces of legislation that these people are passing, virtually identical, okay? These guys try and tell me that there was a difference, you know, and pass it out, these recent differences in legislation that are basically just, you know, pruning leaves off a tree of tyranny as opposed to striking out the root, okay? And I told them, you know, the basic principle if somebody's left wing or right wing, okay, libertarian or hardcore communist. Those are the two things. You either have individual liberties or the collective takes precedence over everybody's rights. Those are your two choices on the spectrum as far as the reality of the choice is concerned. Neither of the two big parties that you're able to vote for fall within either of those spectrums. Number one, the right-wing party wants to sacrifice everybody's rights and liberties and rights to privacy through the search and surveillance bill and then give tax cuts to the already exceedingly rich and none to the poor or anything like that. And secondly, the other guys, they're just saying, oh, well, let's only give slight little cuts off GST off food or let's give extra tax to the rich. Okay, so both of them, they don't work because they're just coming at you from the same direction. One of them eats you from the bottom up and the other one eats you from the top down. And because all the people on the bottom think the guys that are eating you from the bottom up are on their side, they keep voting for them and keep winding up screwing themselves over by voting for the people who are manipulating them. And the people who are voting for the right wing are the people who are used to actually hard working for a living and problem solving and all that sort of stuff and don't want the government to be in their lives. But what happens is the government gets even further into their lives and even further into their pockets and starts cutting away even benefits that they used to have. And they wonder, oh my God, what the heck's going on? And so they go and swing back for the other guys, the next election, who put them even further into the shtuck. It happens every time, every election. People fall for the same old Tweedledum, Tweedledee routine, and it is time that we wake the frack up, ladies and gentlemen. This is no longer tolerable, and I, for one, am not going to stand for it. You listen to The Vinny Eastwood Show. We'll be right back. 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Final segment. Back in a tick.
Bonkers.
I wake up every day is a daydream. Every pin in my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. I know I care about is sex and violence. And every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but unless I let you give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Bonkers back! You listen to the Vinny Eastwood Show, the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It might even be just a little bit bonkers, and maybe, you know, you've got to have a sense of humour about all of this type of terrible stuff that we're talking about, ladies and gentlemen. Really? Otherwise you will go friggin' nuts. It's pretty straightforward. You ask any doctor. Or surgeon, for that matter. When they see terrible things, when they see somebody with a great steel rod pierced through their eye socket or something like that, oh, God, no, just the image of that, even talking about it on radio is horrific. And so they're making jokes about it all the time, you know, like, man, I'll just use it as a towel rail, you know. You know, it's just kind of like you make light of these situations by making jokes out of them so that they don't drill home and turn you into the horror that you see. If you see all the bad stuff all around you and you have no way of transmuting it into something you're capable of digesting without getting sick, okay, that's what you need to do in order to survive, okay? Survival isn't just something that your body does, it's something your mind has to do as well. And that's what I try to do for myself. And I've found now that many people who are supporting the show are now getting in contact with me now that I really need your support, and I've been on air for nearly 2 years and what have you. I'm starting to find out very concretely that this type of platform is absolutely necessary to just keep a hold on the daily madness of life. You know, you got people who are tuning in during work. You naughty, naughty people you are, because work sucks. And those people still donate $5 a month to the Vinnie Eastwood show because they appreciate the levity that I bring to it, okay? And I'm just doing this for everybody else, man. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, my life was over at the tender age of 19 when I got arrested. And ever since then, you know, it's just basically been all downhill from there. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, a lot of the good stuff I could have done in my life before that conviction and all of that kind of stuff, it's done. It's over with. I mean, that part of my life, I'll never get it back. So now I have to work on another way. And it's about giving everything that I got left so that the rest of the world doesn't have to basically find out the hard way as I did just how bad the state can frack your life up. Okay, I don't want anybody else to go through this. And that's why the whole system needs to be woken up to, because it'll come at you from many angles. And they all are linked back to the central spider web of scumbaggery of the banking system and all of this kind of legal fiction nonsense that they all try to lay onto you. Okay, if you ever experience this stuff, it's really rough, man. We've had a number of people on this show who have had their kids stolen off them by the state, or who have had their property taken off them. We even had the ISFA family in Auckland here who refused and disputed to pay properly, mind you, with notes and letters and everything like that, following the formal process of payment dispute. And the water company, Watercare, tried to sell their house out from under them, okay? Nearly $500,000 home they tried to sell out from under them using a proxy, Barfoot and Thompson, a real estate agent, okay, to pay a $3,000 water bill. This is the kind of tyranny that I've helped to expose over the years. These people do not play games. I fortunately have not been in the position since even before becoming an activist where I've actually had to feel the long arm of the law to any great extent. Okay, I'm very grateful for that fact. I'm around documenting it all the time and seeing it happen to other people. And it hurts to see it, because whenever you see bad things happening to other people, it always reminds you of the bad things that happened to yourself, and it spurs you on even more to try and eradicate it forever. I'm sick of seeing my countrymen taxed to death, suffering and not being able to go to the doctor because it's too expensive, and more to the point, even thinking that they have to go to a doctor when they could just be picking a few of the herbs and growing weeds out of the backyard, which have herbal properties that could cure whatever ails them, but they have no idea about it because the public education system's run by the government and tells people to go to the doctor. It's all a feedback loop. Every bad problem that you see in society, the people who you'd expect to solve that problem are actually the ones who created it. It happens in every time. Okay, education system fails people. Why? Oh, okay, because it teaches people to do what they're told, not to think for themselves, not to be creative, not to fulfill their potential. You have any idea how difficult it would be to control an entire classroom full of kids who can think for themselves and want to harness their own potential? You'd actually have to pay attention to them. You'd actually have to care. You'd actually have to listen. You'd actually have to take some patience. You'd actually have to explain things to them so that they could keep doing what they want to do and go in that same direction and improve themselves. Teachers ain't got time for that. And so what does the government do? Oh, that's right. Just recently here, New Zealand Herald, oh, they're going to increase the class sizes now. Can you see any more proof every single day of how bad things are getting and how bad they're going to get? This is not going to end anytime soon. So this is why I'm asking for people to subscribe for $5 a month, so that I have that simple base income, so that I can be around to document and make sure that all those people who are exposing all this stuff that's going on in the media every single day have a platform to get the word out on. Okay, we're going to be getting in a couple new computers, hopefully, and we're going to have some Kiwi activists. We're going to be relaunching Mr. News Counter Spin, so that all the times when we have articles coming out in the media about particular events and what have you, well, I have a list of activists that we've had on the show before who are experts in their fields who we can just bring on for a quick 5 minutes or whatever, via webcam or even on air or whatever, just to quickly give us a brief rundown of what's happening there, and have it uploaded and online, ready for people to view before the mainstream news even goes to air that night at 6 o'clock, okay? That's the idea. If we're hard-hitting and every single day debunking what these crap-swizzling, spineless, jellyfish, scumbaggery snizmongers are doing, okay, we can beat them, okay? And it already occurs to me that the amount of subscribers I've got to my YouTube channel is like more than 20 times what the bulk of the mainstream media equivalent YouTube channels that they've got here on the New Zealand YouTube circuit have. Okay, I've got 20 times more subscribers than them. Nobody cares what these mainstream media people have got to say when they've got a choice. When they don't have a choice, on the other hand, and all they know is the TV in the corner of their room, the general public thinks that it's actually real when it's not. It's not real at all. You've got to make sure that your real media is out there for people to see. And that's why I ask people to support me, because I cannot do it on my own. All of the stuff and everything like that, I've been getting supported by my girlfriend for all this time. But, you know, she can't do that forever. She's working 5 days a week, getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning, going around spraying this horrible, what's it called, Roundup and stuff like that. Oh, goodness knows what it's doing to her. It's horrible. And she winds up broke at the end of every week because she's supporting me. And I can't do that to her anymore. I love her too much. And I don't have any other way to do it, I'm afraid. You know, people have suggested I get a part-time job. Even my friend, he offered me one. I went in, I did the interview and all that kind of stuff. I can't do it, man. I can't. I literally am phobic about being employed. I can't do the sales. I can't do anything. Maybe gardening and what have you every now and again. But I don't even have the time for it anyway. Because even if I take like a day off, just to relax and charge my batteries. And this weekend, I did take a couple of days off. When I come back to it, I have an enormous amount of work to catch up on. I literally do not have the time to go out and get a job of any kind, because I have a full-time job right now. And it's far more hours than any full-time job I've ever had. And it doesn't pay anywhere near as much, but all I want is enough to pay the bills so I can just keep continuing to do it. Because every day we're pumping out new stuff, good stuff that educate, enlighten, and help people out there. And I also want to help to raise money for activists and campaigns and stuff like that. There's so many directions that I want to go, but the first direction, I need the 200 subscribers for $5 a month just to pay all the bills, and then we're sweet, and then I'll stop asking for it. Okay, that's all that I want. And then, boom, everything is going to slide into place like bric-a-brac. We've got people going all over the place looking for subscribers and sponsors and people of all ilks and nature who can come in and contribute in some way, okay? There is a huge movement of people out there. Every single one of them has a particular skill, talent, trade, property, anything, resources, capital. Somebody everywhere has something to contribute. If you're a butcher, a baker, a candlestick maker, you can contribute to the movement. And if you cannot be out there blaring the megaphone, making the documentaries or whatever, just support the people who do, okay? It doesn't have to be me. Just support somebody who does, so that you at least have a stake in the future and don't sit by while you had a couple of extra bucks for a cup of coffee that you could have given to an activist who really needed it, who's doing the job that you just can't do right now because you're too busy. Okay? That's what I'm saying. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening in, and we'll see you again sometime at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.